Good afternoon. You're listening to Local Motion here on KVNF. This is your weekly source for what's happening in your world. Today, we're joined by members of the Hotchkiss Paranormal Investigators Team, also known as HPI. In the studio here today, I'm joined by Hector Zeffirino, who is the lead investigator and founder of the team.
How's it going, everyone?
I'm also joined by Christian Eggstaff, who is the team's researcher and archivist.
Hello, how you doing?
And Seth Davis, who is a lead investigator and a case manager for the team.
How we doing?
I want to talk about your history, obviously, and sort of how you got together, some of the investigations you've been on, and everything in between there. But first, can you give us just a general idea of what it is you actually do when you're conducting a paranormal investigation? Where do you start?
Of course, what I want to do is know the history about the place. So I know either I myself, that we go through the paperwork and see, talk to the historian around that town. And also I talked to Christian as well to see what information that we could pop up. And I just knows that helps us out to see what used to be there. Like, for example, if this place used to be a saloon or something, then that might explain some of the stuff that the people are seeing.
Yeah.
Or even hearing.
Or hearing as well.
Right. And so I wanted to ask you about that part, too. Where do the ideas for where to go do an investigation come from? Is that something people turn you on to, or is it places you're already interested in yourself?
Like the big popular places that, honestly, that make us travel out of town, that further out of town, then, like the Stanley Hotel, that's something that I've always wanted to go to. Mm-hmm. Cripple Creek, I always wanted to go down there, too. Of course, we have a lot of big places like down in Arizona that we were going to plan on doing something. But of course, we have people call us that have stuff going on in their house or their businesses.
Yeah.
And they have us go in and try to see what's going on. Or if they already know what's going on, they want to have evidence to show people.
Yeah.
But, also, we have fans over our Facebook page that tell us, hey, you guys should go check out this place or something. And that gives us ideas as well.
Mm-hmm. So, of course, we'll talk about, you know, everywhere you've been. And I know you've mentioned you've been to some pretty far-flung places here in the United States. But first, I mean, what are the first steps of a paranormal investigation? I mean, when you show up to a jail or something that's purported to be haunted, or there have been some sightings or hearings, as you mentioned, where do you go from there?
As far as the case management goes, we go in and we find out, what does the person know about the situation? What type of hearings have they heard? What type of visuals they've seen? What's going on? And I usually write those down and stuff like that, and then talk with the rest of the team and let them know what's going on. And then we go from there of finding out more of the history.
And after we do that, after we get a background and kind of know what's going on, I think when we're actually at the place where the people are, they kind of give us a walkthrough, and then they kind of give us the hot spots, just like on the big shows. You know, we have to know where to focus our attention, so we don't really, it's not really going to waste time, but we want to make sure that we have the equipment in the right place for the spots that they've notably said this is where something could be, or we've had some issues or incidents happen here. So that's another thing that we do, a tool that we use to in our walkthrough before we do an investigation.
Mm-hmm. So Christian, how much research do you typically do? I mean, do you spend hours and hours, or are you just sort of...
It depends on the situation. So far, it's been kind of pretty simple to look stuff up, because there's been a lot of... the work's kind of done for us. You know, it's so far we've been pretty lucky to just know the background of what we're getting into. You know, locally around here, we've been pretty fortunate.
And what are you looking for when you're looking at a history of a location?
Well, we're trying to see, obviously we know that the place was something else before it's either this person's residence or even a business. So we're trying to look and see what maybe was on, if there was a building there before, the history, if it was a saloon or a, you know, whatever it might be, you know, what kind of history that had, if the house, if someone passed away in it, which really doesn't necessarily mean that it's haunted, but if there's some activity there that you know, in the past that kind of might put some red flags up. You know, that's something that we're going to look into.
So let's go back to HPI's own history. How long have you guys been around, and how did this idea get started?
Well, as we've been a group now for over a year now, a year and like 2 months. Well, really, it was just an idea of mine, honestly. Mm-hmm. I've always been interested in the paranormal, especially I know all of us have our own experiences that is pushing us to want to experience more. Like with me, I've experienced it at my grandma's house in North Delta, and ever since I had the idea I want to see more, like what they do on TV. Mm-hmm. And just started off small, literally with a digital camera and a little digital recorder, and now it's expanded as we have tablets with night vision, thermal, infrared that helps us see in the dark, and a lot of recorders, a lot more equipment now these days that you see on TV that we have. Mm-hmm. And it is just crazy to see from starting that small progressing to here, and I honestly see every single day we're just progressing, more people knowing us, more people interested in this type of stuff, and it just makes me very excited.
Was there one particular experience you had with the paranormal that made you decide, okay, I've got to really do this in a real way?
Well, especially after I experienced what happened to me and my grandma's, is seeing a lady in her mid-30s in an old style dress looking at me behind me, and I looked back and I saw no one was there, when I knew it was just my grandma and I there at the house, and my grandma was fast asleep. So it's just that seeing that really pushed me. But of course, investigations wise, I think the most memorable one, crazy to say, is I would have to say is our second time in Cripple Creek, the Outlaws and Lawmen jail, because of what happened to me. I am nervous, but honestly, it's just that it's my job. It's what I love to do. I want to show people, and I want to see what they feel when they go in there.
Yeah. So I want to talk about some of your recent investigations at the San Juan County Jail and the Bent Elbow Hotel in Silverton. But first, let's jump back to the Cripple Creek investigation. So where exactly was this, and what kind of a location was it?
It was an old jail. It was this Outlaws and Lawmen jail. It's a museum now, too. Mm-hmm. It's an awesome place. It really is. A lot of history. And that was another place, as Christian said, that the history of the place was already thrown at us, so we knew. So that helped us out a lot. I could feel that the kind of people were in there. Mm-hmm. The most experience that happened to me was there in solitary confinement. I had a guy that really did not like me, the spirit of the guy. I admit that after that situation, after what happened to me, I'm completely changed of how I investigate. But so, I don't know, just something felt to me that I was very upset. I didn't feel myself in there.
Yeah.
I stepped outside to get some fresh air after I... It's just really creepy saying it, because it's like I remember it like it happened to me just yesterday. It was me passing out because I felt someone was choking me.
Tell me more about that. I mean, what happened?
Well, I know I can't really say much, but sure. On our Facebook page, we do have the audio of what it told me. Mm-hmm. And I was, like I said, I wasn't myself. I'm a very nice, respectful guy, but I was saying cuss words. I was trying to, because I knew I didn't like what he did. He was a child molester and a pedophile. I know I don't have no kids myself, but I know that just made me very upset. And I knew stuff happened there before. Everyone was having experiences there. And with it slowing down, finally, it told me to F you. Mm-hmm. We got the audio of it. And then Ethan, my other lead investigator, unfortunately couldn't join us today. He and Anthony Romero had to carry me outside so I can get some fresh air. And they sprayed water on me so I can wake up. But I didn't remember anything. I'm just going by what they told me of what happened, what they saw, because I completely blacked out.
So it sounds like, on the surface, Hotchkiss Paranormal Investigator is somewhat of a scientific endeavor, but it sounds like it can become pretty personal and emotional pretty rapidly.
Oh, yeah. It's like the Melrose Hotel. That was very emotional, very not necessarily for us, but for family members that had to deal with it.
Yeah. The Melrose Hotel in Grand Junction.
Yes.
All right. So when did you conduct an investigation there?
That was actually our very first time when we got all this, and it was in the process of having us dealing with the court system and everything like that. And that's bad for us.
Mm-hmm.
But it actually happened in February of 2013, of this year, actually. Back in 1997, the owner at that time, mm-hmm. he murdered his wife. And it actually made the papers. It was on the Daily Sentinel. And it's just that they found her head at Douglas Pass, and their body didn't know where it was at.
Hmm.
So we did the investigation and trying to figure some questions out. We had a spirit box that reads off FM frequencies, and the voices will come out. And you could tell when it's a radio station,
mm-hmm.
but it's clear as day when it comes to a voice coming out of there. And what it said, it just kept on saying words like from a female voice. We asked, what led your husband to murder you? It was saying stuff about money. So it was money issues. And then the body wise, it terrifies Seth and I still to this day. As we crawled in the basement, there's literally a room full of dirt. And we crawled up there, just sat down and asked questions. Henry, who's there right now, came from Los Angeles. He has some friends there still that work on a forensic team down there, like the CSI people.
Mm-hmm.
He brought them down to Grand Junction, dug up in there. We both had a feeling that maybe her body was in there, but we didn't want to say nothing because we didn't want to excite people.
Sure.
And say maybe her body is there. But he went ahead and checked, and sure enough, they did find female bones in there.
Now, we should mention that in this case of Marcus Bebb Jones, who's the man we're talking about here, that was later convicted of murder after admitting he had killed his wife, this team of investigators that, like you say, was called in by Henry Starks, the hotel's manager, wasn't tied in any way to the actual criminal investigation and prosecution of Bebb Jones. And to this day, there haven't been any confirmed reports that female bones were discovered at the hotel site.
They use it as a trigger object, our equipment, our evidence, I mean, to see if he would be emotional about it. And he was. He finally did admit that, yes, I murdered my wife. And I'm just happy to say he's there 20-plus years now. He's an older guy, so I know he'll probably pass away in there. It just sucks that it took that long to finally convict him and mm-hmm. put him into where he deserves to be at. But I'm just very – that's just one – investigation that is for the record books. That's one that completely launched HPI and made us look good. But at the same time, I didn't care about that. What I cared about is that I wanted to help these people out. That was exactly what I wanted to do at the first, is actually help someone out. And we did. We helped a family out, even though we couldn't be able to bring her back. But they felt comfortable because we helped them out to finally find enough evidence and finally have him admit to it. He knew that he was not going to run away from this.
So were you guys officially acknowledged in any capacity as having helped this investigation? Or, I mean, you're a business, you know,
yeah.
you're an investigative team, and, you know, any CSI team or any sort of forensics team would be acknowledged, you know, as having aided in investigation. So how does that work with you? I mean, have you experienced any sort of official recognition that, you know, you were sort of key to this success?
We did.
Yeah.
We did. They're in Grand Junction. We're very well known now because of that situation. And they're at the Melrose. Our picture's hanging there
mm-hmm.
with information of what we did.
Mm-hmm.
Is with the mayor and no one of Grand Junction knowing as well. They're just very blessed. I'm not saying we need a parade or something like that.
Right.
But it's just knowing that they are very grateful for what we did.
So you mentioned that you do this for a couple of different reasons, but one of those reasons is that it's your job. And I'm curious, is this a full-time job for all of you guys, or how does that work?
I wish.
I wish it was a full-time job, too.
This just helps us out. It's just a... a small business, a small non-profitable organization business. Mm-hmm. And we do have clothing line that we make money off of, as well as we just charge for our travel expenses.
Okay.
For the investigations, whoever calls us.
Yeah.
Like I said, like the Stanley Hotel and all that, we never got paid for that, but honestly, because we had to do the calls for that. But like we did a presentation up there, and we did get paid up there because we did a presentation for them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a nice, it's like a fun, more than just a hobby, because it's like another, it's a business, but it's just fun to do on the side. We do all have full-time jobs. As I work at Anytime Fitness as assistant manager of two fitness clubs, and I know it's just that we all have real jobs, but I wish this was our full-time one.
I work at the Delta Library, so I'm, yeah, that's my full-time job. But yeah, unfortunately, we wish we could have this to be our full-time gig, but I mean, I think for us too, it's just that we're all believers, and for us, it's the exciting part as to go, and when we go do an investigation, I think we've only been shut out like once, where we usually find evidence every single time. So it's not a matter of, are we going to find something? It's a matter of, when we do find something, what are we going to do with it? How are we going to use it? And,
so let's talk about how you do your job, in terms of just the actual investigations. You've got a couple of tablets sitting here on the table, and I know you mentioned you use some infrared radars and things. So, I mean, I know when people see paranormal investigators on TV, Sci-Fi Channel, they see a lot of glow-in-the-dark green gadgets. So is that close to reality? I mean, are you using the same equipment that those guys have?
Yeah, we have night vision.
Mm-hmm.
We got the thermal, that even though they're like, well, why are they using thermal when ghosts will give off, spirits will give off like coldness. I actually have an image here that you do see. You see the areas, and of course you're going to say, okay, those are machines, that's why it's warm. But you do see how it'll come in the thermal, is that it'll be a body, but it'll be a lot colder than the other areas. It'll be a lot darker.
Hmm.
And as far as we have a laser grid that we set up in areas that they say they see shadows moving. So that helps us out. We'll set that guy there. We'll set a camera next to it. And then those green lasers will get interrupted. Something will be walking in front of it, and we could tell.
Hmm.
So we also have what they call a K2, which you see on the bigger shows.
Mm-hmm.
And we do go in. We analyze the evidence between each other to see what we've caught and stuff. And there's a lot of people that actually go through the evidence and stuff, and we sit down and we compare it, and we do try to debunk a lot of the stuff that is stated or isn't stated. If we hear something, was it like just a bang from one of us, or door closing from the wind, or something like that? Yeah. So that way we can go through our analyzing to make sure that what we heard was factual or debunkable.
And I think some of our most solid evidence that we've got, 90% of our evidence really comes from some really solid EVPs, some electronic voice phenomenon, where we know it's 100% real, and we're really catching some good stuff, some legitimate answers to questions, and some pretty nasty responses. And it's it's not always pleasant, but I think we've all been called out, cussed at, and I think most of the spirits that we encounter, they're not completely friendly. And so we've had some instances where, and we had a crate thrown at us across a room, and no one was around it, and we've had some pretty cool and scary experiences.
And with the voice capturing technology you use, is that the one that you mentioned was something called a spirit finder or a spirit tracker?
Well, we do have a spirit box.
Spirit
and
box.
And that will bring up the voices, and we just put the recorder near it because that doesn't record it.
Mm-hmm.
And we also, a new piece of equipment that we used over in Silverton was the Ovilus 3, which is basically a spirit box, but it actually spells out the words to you. It'll say it right on the screen.
That you're capturing.
That we're capturing live.
Yeah.
And, of course, we'll put a recording near there, too, and then we'll also have to keep it on the audio of the tablets here. And these, the audio of the recorders, audio of these tablets are so sensitive. We might not hear it at the time, but analyzing, we're like, man, we can't believe we didn't hear it at the time because it sounded so loud. But it just shows that how sensitive these audio on devices are.
So let's hear a sample of one of these voices that you've captured doing one of your investigations. I see you've got one right here. So what is this recording that we're going to hear?
This recording is over at the Melrose Hotel.
Okay.
And Ethan is walking with the tablet. And this will just show how clear the audio could be on these tablets. He'll ask the question, is anyone here that wants to talk to us? And I have my other two investigators, Seth, and we are actually down in the end of the hallway. I was telling them where I would like for them to go next. And then we even heard it all the way at the end of the hallway. So I'll go ahead and play it here.
Is there anybody in here that wants to talk?
What was that?
Did you guys hear that too?
Yeah.
What was it?
Right there where when it said, hey.
Hey. Yeah. And I'll just, that just shows how clear the audio could easily be on these tablets.
So let's talk about your most recent investigations. You went to Silverton.
Yeah.
You investigated the San Juan County Jail and the Bent Elbow Hotel. So what brought you out there in the first place?
Well, I was being in conversations with Ray DeLeo, his name is. He works at the museum, works with the history there, with the historian there. And even when I called him, I knew there's stuff that goes on there in Silverton. And our main focus was I wanted to check out the jail. But then the second we got into town, we had the last minute call saying, hey, this hotel, the Bent Elbow, wants you to investigate it, and you have the room for free. And I'm like, all right, let's do it.
That worked out.
Yeah, no one will give up a free thing.
Sure.
And it was a crazy night. Both of those, even Ray, even didn't think we were going to get anything at the jail. But we got some interesting stuff there. We have that K2, as Seth was talking about, it reads off high energy fields.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to sit in one of the cells. I was just sitting down. I was videoing with my phone because the other tablets were being used. So I was just sitting there asking questions. I said, and it was at a steel green, which means that there's no movement. From green, it spikes all the way up to red, which there's something near it, some energy force near it. And I asked the question, are you here in the cell next to me? And it spiked all the way up to red. And I asked again, I was like, well, just to confirm it, can you let me know, are you, and I even tricked it. I was like, are you in the cell in front of me? Nothing. Are you in the cell with me? Nothing.
Mm-hmm.
I said again, are you in the cell next to me? It spiked up again.
Mm-hmm.
So that was very interesting. And they could, and I had that video. I made sure on that video they could see that it was not spiking at all when I was asking for the other cells, just for that one next to me.
Yeah. So you mentioned that before you went there, though, you had heard that there was stuff going on. So what kind of stuff are we talking about?
Well, Silverton is an old mining town. Right. And Silverton, they had a lot of tragedy has happened there. Mm-hmm. I know there was finding out that there was a big, it was called Spanish flu, that was kind of like, to them, it seemed like it was the end of the world. It was like, you did not want to touch this person because you might get infected. It was like a zombie apocalypse a little bit like right. that.
And when was this?
That was back in
1918.
So this was part of the flu epidemic that was actually spread across the whole state.
Yep.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And we actually saw the headstone of the first victim who passed away from it. They had a big flood there as well. That I remembered that a lot of the bones from that hillside cemetery ended up flowing into the town, and that really ruined a lot of places. That big flood there happened. And, of course, they're in the mines. Back then, it's not like the mines now these days. It was probably very unsafe back then. And there was probably a lot of cave-ins, and people passed away with that as well. That could also fall into people feeling connected to this building.
So there's a lot of death everywhere. But,
oh, yeah.
I mean, do you feel like these kinds of areas where there's a lot of tragedy or sudden death like that, is that what draws the paranormal activity to an area?
Yeah, because whenever someone passes away, a sudden, not a very good death, like a sudden, not really good death, it just happens so quickly that it takes them a little while to go to admit that I'm not in human form anymore. And it's sad. It really is. We've had some that, like, residual type of haunts that falls under a, they don't know that they're passed away. They're just living life like it is. They're just living life like a tape recorder, just playing over and over again.
So as people who, you know, think of paranormal activity and don't question it for a second, I mean, how do you explain the work you do to the obvious skeptics that are out there?
We have skeptics, but all I feel is that if they are skeptics, see whatever they have free time, they can come on an investigation with us and see if they experience something. And they would also see that it's not like we're playing around. It's not like we're rigging things up or anything like that, because they'll see for themselves that something is going on.
I mean, what we're doing is, I mean, we're not, you know, I mean, we all like attention, but we don't like it that much to make stuff up. It's not, I mean, this is, when we go out, we're all believers, but when we go to an investigation, I mean, we're just as surprised at some of the things that we've caught and seen. And, I mean, it's, you know, it's amazing. I mean, we believe, but it's also, there's times where I think, you know, you are a little skeptical as, are we really going to catch anything? You know, I work at the Delta Library every day, and I didn't really feel like the Delta Library was a haunted place. I mean, there's a part of the building that's 100 years old, but I never felt like this place is haunted because of that. And I wouldn't say it's actually haunted in the sense that, you know, books aren't flying off the shelves or whatever, but when we did an investigation there, we caught some pretty convincing EVPs and some pictures and some stuff that we're still trying to, I'm still looking up. I'm still trying to figure out. We got some names of some, you know, people that were revealing themselves. And, you know, we all go in hoping that we're going to find something. And most of the time we do. But I mean, you know, it's amazing. It's, you know, it's not like a haunted house where you, it looks like, oh, this house is old and creepy looking. It's got to be haunted. I mean, you can go in maybe a modern house where something's happened on the ground before and there's a residual, there's something going on there that's been there for a while. And so it's not just because it looks old and creepy, you know.
So it sounds like the paranormal gets a little bit more normal as you continue to do this.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, guys, thanks for joining us here on Local Motion today on KVNF. If you're just tuning in, we've been talking with members of the Hotchkiss Paranormal Investigators team. They will be doing a presentation on their findings, some of their research methods, and the team in general. They will be doing a presentation on some of their findings, their most popular evidence, and just explaining the kind of work they do at the Hotchkiss Library on August 15th at 2 p.m. and also at the Delta Library at 1 p.m. on the 17th. So I've been speaking with Hector Zeffirino, who is the founder and lead investigator of Hotchkiss Paranormal Investigators. I've also been speaking with Christian Eggstaff, who's the team's researcher and archivist, and Seth Davis, who is a lead investigator and case manager. So thank you guys again for coming in and talking with us.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us. Appreciate it.